Hello and welcome to the fifth interview in the series Dialogue with Jean-Marc Berthoud. My name is Didier Erne and I'm your host. In today's episode, we would like to continue our series on the life of Mr. Berthoud. Last time, we looked at his conversion experience in 1965, his marriage to Rosemary at the end of the 60s, and finally his first publication, a journal which reviewed various topics from a Christian perspective. This time, we focus on his life during the 80s and 90s, a period when God led him providentially from one project to the other. Mr. Berthoud, it's good to have you here.
It's a great pleasure for me.
God is truth, and he wants to be worshipped in truth. He hates untruth, whether it involves himself, man, or creation. On the other hand, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 2, that knowledge without love is nothing. Love in the form of charity, but above all brotherly love for other Christians, is the sign of true conversion. Now, as our society is abandoning its Christian foundation, Christian leaders and pastors struggle with the tension between telling the truth and being perceived as unloving. In order to tell hard truths about a wicked society, you have to be willing to face backlash from that society, as did the prophets of old. And few people want that responsibility. This task, very much the task in a prophetic spirit, is therefore often a solitary work, where all official channels of reaching fellow Christian are closed, and you are wholly dependent on the providence of God. Mr. Berthoud, we discussed last time how you started your first Christian publication, Documentation Chrétienne, and some other topics you wrote about. How was this publication received in the Christian churches around you, and how long did it last?
Well, I just want to say, with regard to your earlier remarks, that as Patriarch Photius of the 10th century, Patriarch of Constantinople, would put it, there is no greater love than the love of truth. And I think that this balances us with the accent that is so often put on a love without truth. In fact, a love without truth is no love at all. Just as truth without charity, without love for the person one speaks to or speaks about, is no truth at all. So we have to keep together what God has put together. Charity and truth must come together always. Now, you asked me about the publications in Documentation Chrétienne. Well, the Documentation Chrétienne was the fruit of the first part of our work was with this battle with regard to the tremendous wave of activity, political activity, to legitimize legally abortion, that is, the killing of little children. And this led me to handwritten letters to over 200 pastors and priests and evangelists and so on, which led to also to an impasse, because in fact nobody wanted to speak to me except one priest who showed me, put me into contact with some laymen in the Roman Catholic Church who were defending the same causes as I was. It lasted from 1973 to 1978. It was an outgrowth of the previous work and led finally to another kind of work and application with regard to questions concerning the family and school. So we in the Documentation Chrétienne would take on subjects which were not usually treated, which were put aside. And so we discussed at length the nature of the charismatic movement in which we had been involved ourselves, my wife and myself, for quite a while, in various ways. But we also studied the nature of the secular society, showing that the secular, the word secular means without God. So it's not a society that is secular, which seems to be quite nice, but it's a secular, it's a society where God is excluded. Or we would take on questions relating to the authority in the Christian life, which has given to a republication of a work I wrote at that time called Authority in the Christian Life. Now, finally, we came to consider the central issue, in fact, that the idea that love is opposed to law. And the Bible teaches us exactly the contrary, that the obedience to the commandments of God is in fact love. That is, if I respect my neighbor, if I respect his property, if I respect his wife, if I respect his children and his way of living, if I respect these things, I'm applying the law and I'm showing him love. If I speak to him about things which are incorrect in his life or in his beliefs, and I try to bring him to an understanding of the truth, I am manifesting love as well. So our last publication that we wanted to publish, but we didn't publish it because Documentation Chrétienne stopped because of lack of funds, was on the nature of the law, the nature of God's law, and the importance of God's law and the application of God's law. And at that time, somebody had offered to cover all our costs for publication, and he had convictions which were exactly the opposite to ours. It was very striking that he had offered to do this. And I couldn't accept to pre-publish something which would go against his own feelings and then accept his money. So I wrote to him and sent him a copy of what we were going to publish, and he was very shocked and asked me to submit my writing to responsible evangelical and reformed teachers, which I did. And about half of them responded, and all those who responded were in agreement with me, with what I was teaching. And so I sent them to send this to this person who had offered so generously, but I never heard any more news from him. But I heard some news from God, because how did I do that? It was because the funds immediately stopped. Nobody could know who was giving us money. It was impossible that this could be arranged by anybody. And they altogether stopped from one day to the other. And so we never had any more funds to continue the work. And I was very shocked by this. And I wondered whether I had done something wrong. God's providence was working in strange ways, as often does. But in fact, he was wanting me to change direction, not direction with regard to the truth of what we had been writing, but direction with not the theoretical work, but practical work. And a lady that came from a Roman Catholic background came to see us to see what could do to defend children who were being abused by what was called sexual education. So that led us to establish the Christian Parents Association, which was interdenominational and mainly supported by Roman Catholics, traditionalists.
At the end of the 70s, with a grown family, so you started to study and make sense of the challenges of modernity in regard to education and family life. How did you address these challenges?
Well, as we do usually, we wait for the occasion. So when there is some kind of law that is being put forward, we examine that law, publish a document, and intervene in the situation. We don't have a theory of how we must act. We are dependent on God's providence to provide occasions to act. So we did so with regard to the family. We did so with regard to also to education. The family, we wanted to reestablish the basis for a sane family life, the structure of a sane family life, which are defined in Scripture, but not only in Scripture, they are in the order of creation itself. So we had the order of creation to back us up, not only Scripture, so we could work on both in both fields, and we examined questions of legal opposition to immoral behavior with regard to young people and so on. And with regard to education, of course, it was a time it was a time when all sorts of innovations were being introduced into the school system. For example, new maths, what we call new maths, which was changing the base for calculations for young children of 6 or 7, things which usually are examined at the time you enter university or something like that. Or, for example, history without dates. That was a new innovation. So you break history down to subject studies and you don't have the structure of dates, or grammar without rules. And you had all this disintegration of the educational system, and also you had also the destabilization of the school teachers by the changing of methods continually. So we intervened in so many of these fields, and this led to a various number of publications we would distribute. We touched many, many aspects of society. For example, political authorities, school teachers, and other fields.
Apart from the Association of Christian Parents, another major outcome of this battle was your book entitled The School and the Family Against Utopia. What were the major themes you addressed in that book?
Well, I have mentioned it before. They were basically the attacks that were directed against the traditional family, and also the attacks against traditional methods of teaching. So we responded to these as well as we could. And we even carried the battle onto the political and institutional level. We managed even to stop for a time initiatives from the federal government to modify the judicial law regarding questions of sexual legality. That is, for example, lowering the age for the majority of young girls so that they could more easily be abused by those who wanted to do so.
During the 80s, you were doing research on family and education. And another topic emerged that was also very important. What was that?
Well, that was the question of creation. I had given a number of sermons. I'd been asked to give a number of sermons on the first chapters of Genesis. And I had come to discover that there was a wonderful teaching in these chapters on the metaphysical basis of the Christian faith and of the created order. And this had led to the publications within our documents, the documents we would send out through the Parents Association, publication of more and more texts relating to creation. And it became clear that we should have some other kind of organization to do so. One thing I would say here is that there were no organizations to which we could refer on the subjects we wanted to treat. So we had, with God's help, to create every time the structure from which we were acting. And here we created an association called Creation, Bible and Science, which is a program in itself. And we began publishing articles and refutations and explanation of the biblical teaching, explanation of the order of creation, explaining also the errors of evolutionism. And one of the things we were very worried about was theistic evolution, that is, evolution not by accident, but evolution by the intelligent action of God. And of course, this is nonsense on the plane of, we showed that this was nonsense on the plane of the Bible. The Bible teaches no evolution of any kind. And it was also nonsense on the basis of hard science. In fact, there are no proofs, or none at all, as to the process of evolution, and particularly of theistic evolution, which was very much opposed by the hardliners of material evolution. So we began publishing texts on these matters.
As it was with the Association for Christian Parents, so it was for Croatian Bible and Science. Is the book that you wrote with the same title a kind of a summary of your writings during that period?
Indeed, in fact, most of my writings are of that nature. I am called to examine a certain question, and to examine that same question from another angle, and then somebody else asks me to examine something related to these problems, and gradually a mass of written material is produced. And when I look at this after a number of years, for example, for the Parents Association after 10 years, I find that there was material for a very harmonious and organically well-organized book. It was not thought of as such. It was simply the result of common preoccupations on the similar subjects. And the same thing happened with Creation, Bible and Science. We put together all the material we had developed over perhaps a number of 8 or 9 years. And we were very thankful to have a publisher that was a large dome with Monsieur Dimitrievich, who is now deceased, who offered us a collection in his major publishing house, large dome.
In your battle against evolution and the humanistic destruction of the family and Christian education, you received more help from traditional Catholics than from the evangelicals. What was it that these Catholics understood better than those closest to you?
Yes, so what they understood was that there was such a thing as God's law, which had been forgotten in most of our Protestant circles. That God's law, that ethics does not concern simply the life of the family, the church, and personal piety. So these traditional Roman Catholics, I'm not speaking of the more modern social teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, which is not based on the Decalogue, but based on human rights, and human rights being an invention of human covetedness. Now, these traditional Catholics, to which I'd been, these laymen, to whom I had been directed by a Roman Catholic priest who said he could not do anything for me because he had been submerged by the attacks of the feminists, personally, because he was defending the cause of the unborn child publicly during the debates. He directed me to these Roman Catholic laymen, and they were very pleased to find a Protestant who had similar ideas to themselves. And I was very pleased to do so. It was at that time that I discovered with great pleasure the Institute of Biblical Law of Ruzas Rajduni. So it was their interest in the law of God that made them more susceptible to understand and to support what we were doing. So it was a non-denominational enterprise, in a sense.
In the beginning of the 90s, you took over the evangelical publication Résister, and you changed it into Résister et Construire. What was the background of this publication, and why did you want to change its name?
The background was a very fine friend of mine, an old gentleman who was beginning. He had founded that review called Résister, and he felt he could not continue because of his age. So he thought, and I think he was right, but I didn't want to do this at the time because of my workload was too heavy. You know, earning one's living and defending all these causes. There's some costs even to family life as a result, but God provides there also if one does his will. This old gentleman, very fine man called Ophir Le Chaux, phoned me and asked me, he said, well, you're the person to take on the review because I'm getting too old. I said, no, I'm not the person. I have too much to do. And gradually insisted and finally offered to support the work to some degree. And so I accepted and took on this review. But I didn't want... this review was very interesting because it warned the Christian people about all sorts of dangers. Dangers from secularism, dangers from communism, dangers from charismatic movement, dangers from Roman Catholic Church, and so on. But this was, to me, somewhat too negative. And so I thought we must give a positive line to the review, and I added the word construire. So it's resist and construct. And this lasted some 18 years. It was a polemical review, but also a very constructive review. And the first issue was made the bridge with the former work. It was concerned with the biblical teaching on the family.
The topics you wrote about were quite controversial. Nevertheless, you were able to publish them in a collection called Collection Message. How was it possible to publish these books with a publisher, Lars Stumm, who wasn't even explicitly Christian?
Now, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, God, when his children don't speak out, causes stones to cry out. And in this case, this was the case of Monsieur Dmitrievitch, who was the founder and dominating influence of the Edition L'Age d'Homme. He was of Orthodox background, Serbian background. He had great respect for the heritage of the Christian faith. I think God knows only, but I think that he was a Christian. But he didn't have very solid foundations. And he was always interested in publishing things which were original and particularly the fruit of deep convictions. And he had sympathy for a Protestant background which was not liberal. So one day he offered me a collection of books. Would I not like to have a collection of books in his publication? And I eventually accepted, and we published the first books in 1992, which was a collection of essays on Christianity and revolution. He would not publish it in 1989 because he was very opposed to the very nature of revolution, the French Revolution first, but also the revolution which had ravaged his own country, Yugoslavia.
During this period, you started a bookshop called La Proue near the cathedral in Lausanne. How did this come about, and what did you want to achieve with this shop?
Well, I had no idea whatever of having a one day a bookshop. It was completely outside the limits of our means, and the idea had not crossed my mind. But we had this collection of books with Lars Stumm. And we met one Saturday afternoon to discuss the first books that I was publishing there at that time on the history of the Christian Church in our part of Switzerland, and also my refutation of the religion of human rights. Now, we were discussing these matters, but this led to a discussion on certain ethical matters in which I had to confront Monsieur Dmitrievitch very strongly. And I thought, well, that was the end of my publications. But no, he was a man who respected the people standing up to him. And a week later, he phoned me to offer me a little bookshop he had. He had opened a much bigger bookshop, and he didn't know what to do with this little bookshop, and if I liked, I could have it at a modest rent. And, of course, this idea had never crossed our minds. We had to examine things. He asked me how long I wanted to take a decision. So I said 2 weeks, and we discussed matters with my wife. We providentially got some support from a businessman who I discovered had retired, and he had an immense fortune, and he had a problem what to do with his money. So eventually he gave us some money to start the bookshop. All this in God's good providence. And we had, for the working of the bookshop, we had quite a clear vision. Examine all things and retain that which is good. So we had no denominational boundaries. We didn't even make a distinction between Christians and non-Christians. What we had were books that were of lasting value on the subject that we're treating. And we finally got a collection of books in this bookshop, which was quite amazing. Some people came from abroad, passed in our bookshop, and said, well, we've never seen a bookshop like that. And it was a very great compliment for us. But it was, of course, as there is not a great market for books that deal with really controversial and politically incorrect matters, we didn't make a fortune, of course, but we managed to pay our bills for 23 or 24 years, between 1993 and 2016. And I was very thankful. It was a center of Christian teaching in the town of Lausanne, just below the cathedral. And we had all sorts of activities like expositions of paintings or conferences or discussion groups. The last activity we had in that bookshop was a bi-monthly Bible study on the Book of Revelation, which has turned out to be the basic framework for a series of volumes that I'm publishing now on the subject.
Finally, looking back at all these battles and controversies, what did they teach you about the current spiritual state of so many churches?
Well, that's a very big question. Of course, I've made no examination of the subject. But what I must say is that there is not a very determined love for truth in the churches today. There is a great influence of manipulative techniques. There is a great desire for consensus. I'm not speaking in a general way. I think there are exceptions as well. But it is very difficult to find Christians that are prepared to look at the facts of our reality, present reality, in the face and see the dangers that are threatening us today. And these dangers are very great. It's not a totalitarian system that is limited to some nations like China or Germany, or perhaps, the Soviet Union. But it's a mentality that is now showing in the sights of humanism, that is the cult of man, the worship of man, and secularism, which is the exclusion of the true God. This is something which is becoming extraordinarily active in our present world through the mask of sanitarian preoccupations. And I think that it's very dangerous for the present situation of the churches not to look at things in the face and see that they are being very strongly attacked by state systems which have no respect whatever for God and for his laws. So I think that the work that we have been doing is even more vital today than it was so many years ago. We traveled a long journey during these 40 to 50 years. But now we are at the point where what we were warning about is now becoming almost a visible reality. So I think that the weakness of the church will probably be turned into strength by the coming persecution that is on the frontier of what we perceive.
We have come again to the end of what I hope has been an interesting and encouraging episode. Thank you, Mr. Berthu, for taking time to discuss your life and work with us.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure and a privilege. May God bless what has been said to our hearers.
Dear listener, if you are interested in the writings of Jean-Marc Berthu, and if you read French, you'll find all the mentioned reviews edited by Mr. Berthu online for free under calvinism.ch. Please join us for the next episode, where we'll discuss Mr. Berthu's most recent projects. Thank you for listening.